You're listening to the American Music Hour. This is Mike Bogle, and today in the studio I have Mr. Bobby Stanton, guitarist extraordinaire and professor of guitar and improvisation and songwriting and an ensemble director at the McNally Smith College of Music in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Let's see. Thank you.
was fun.
Thank you. We're in the studio now with two guys.
Bobby
two
Stanton.
Two chicks and two dogs. No, one chick.
Yeah. So, Bobby, what do you call that? Did you write that?
This is a song I recorded back in the 40s with Coltrane.
Yeah.
This is a song. It's a Christmas song, I think, or it's from a movie. And it's called These Are a Few of My Favorite Things, or Just My Favorite Things.
Yeah. It's a great song. I met a guy once at that had put some jazz lyrics to that. And, well, you know, you can imagine what a jazz musician's favorite things might be.
Right.
You know, I don't know, you know, something like music by Coltrane and solos by Parker and stuff like that. It was pretty cool.
There's also the other Coltrane song that had some pretty amazing lyrics. I can just see Mr. Coltrane sitting around writing the lyrics to Giant Steps. It's back when we were kids or something.
Something like that.
Something Giant Steps, great big giants.
Did he actually write the lyrics to that or somebody else?
I'd always picture him in my mind just laboring over those lyrics.
I think that was one that lyrics were written later to it.
I think you're right.
Miles Davis wrote some nice lyrics, though, on da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Of the wonderful things that you get out of life, there are four. Baby, that may not seem like nobody needs more.
Did he really write that?
He wrote those, as far as I know. Yeah.
Wow. I did not know.
Yes.
There's a lot of famous lyrics in jazz.
Yeah, what are some of your favorite ones?
When an eel lunges out and he bites off your snout, that's a more.
Yeah, I like. There's the funny songs are good. I don't know. There's a few of those that are. Who's the guy that wrote a few things, like My Attorney Bernie and all that stuff?
Yeah, is that Grusin or somebody? It's in the legal real book.
Yeah, his name is escaping me right now. It'll come to me. But he wrote some really good, funny songs. He actually wrote Peel Me a Grape, too, which was a big Grammy hit for someone here recently. The girl, piano player from Canada.
Mm. Nora Jones?
No, but Nora Jones is someone dear to my heart. She was actually one of my students. Did you
really
know that? Yeah, she was in my band when she was just knee-high to a grasshopper.
She's Robbie Shanker's daughter, right? Shankar.
That's correct.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What talent. Yeah, she was, when she was in my, I had a junior college band down in Texas, and she played piano and saxophone in it. Yeah, when she was still in high school.
I didn't know that.
But, I had no idea that she could sing like that. Then later I heard her, you know, at North Texas, University of North Texas. She went to school there, and she definitely distinguished herself as a unique voice. I heard it with the Jazz Singers group at North Texas, and you know, when she would have a solo, it was really really cool.
Is she a good piano player? Because I always hear she plays like the double octaves a lot on for pop songs, I guess maybe. But you know,
I think she's a solid piano player.
Yeah,
she's a lot better than most. Yeah. Singers out there of her popularity, you know. Yeah. So she can hold her own. I don't think she considers herself a jazz pianist. You know, she doesn't really claim to be one. But yeah, she can play. Yeah.
I had a student named Gillian Welch, and it was Dave Rawlings also, and they're like a duo, and they were her opening act for that year that she had that big hit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they must have got to know her pretty well.
Yes. So it's kind of a cosmic connection here as well, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, did you ever hear the story how she, I don't know, she met some guys at North Texas that she was chauffeuring around because she had the biggest car in the jazz department. She had like an old Cadillac or something.
Yeah.
And so she had to go pick him up to bring him over to play at the school and get the upright bass and everything. So she had the only car that could fit the bass in there and ended up making some good connections and heading up to New York. And everything worked out for her. So
I guess. She's doing okay.
But yeah, but back to lyrics, man. I mean, I love, of course, Lush Life.
Sure.
Lush Life is good. Written by one of my favorite composers, Billy Strayhorn.
Yeah.
He, I think, wrote that when he was like 16 or 17.
Wow.
Have you heard that story?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of chords for a 16-year-old.
It really is. Yeah, he was a unique guy. Happens to be, we share the same birthday.
When?
November 29th.
November, write that down, folks.
1934.
No. Oh, wow. No. The day before yesterday was Ornette Coleman's and Samuel Barber's birthday.
Really?
Both on the same day. Well, they not the same age, of course, but had Samuel Barber lived, he would have been 75 or something. And Ornette Coleman is coming here to open the Walker Art Center.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
From Fort Worth, Texas.
Is that where he's from?
Yeah, I believe.
Does Fort Worth ever cross your mind? Home of Billy Bob's. I loved Fort Worth. I was just there.
Yeah, Fort Worth is cool. I was just there, too. But yeah, there's
a beautiful theater there.
Mm-hmm. You mean the Caravan?
It's a theater, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's just beautiful. It's got white walls and all these sculptures on it.
Oh, you mean the Bass Hall? Probably.
Probably.
Bass, yeah, that's it. Is.
That sounds right.
It's the newer hall. Is that in the last like 5 or 6 years?
About a year ago, 2 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, that's a beautiful hall they have down. Unfortunately, they closed the Caravan of Dreams, which was a really nice jazz club that was down there. But, well, hey, why don't we play something and then, tell some more jokes.
Okay.
What you want to play? We could do. You want to do Giant Steps or something like that? Or
I don't want to do Giant Steps. It's too hard.
You got me thinking about Giant Steps.
Yeah, yeah. We just did a Coltrane too, but we were playing. We were talking about Bill Evans because I was trying to figure out those voicings on a guitar. Mm-hmm. So you want to play Autumn Leaves?
Sure.
That's not really a.
That's a good one.
That's kind of a simple song, but
that's a great one.
Can I play an introduction? I'll go. I studied with this guy named Lenny Bro in Nashville, and he was like a finger style. You probably can't see out there in radio land, but I play with my fingers instead of a pick. So I studied with this guy, Lenny Bro, and he's like the champion of all finger style jazz guitar players. And he did a version of this, but this is not like his. It's in a different key. So it goes like, it does all these harmonic things like this. Thank you.
a good one.
Yeah. That felt like autumn.
That's true. It did.
Or the fully morts, as the French say.
Yeah.
I saw a song here in your book called Mr. Bojangles.
Oh, yeah.
I used to play in a blues band with the drummer who played on that recording, Sammy Creason. He passed away. He was playing with Delbert McClinton.
Okay.
When last we met. But that's a real pretty song, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't played it that much. I put it in the book for some gig somewhere a long time ago. And why don't you play it?
I haven't played it since I was a teenager, I don't think, but mistake.
Makes it good.
Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles. Danced.
I'll try the last verse.
Dance for those at minstrel shows and county fairs. Throughout the South, he spoke with tears of 15 years how his dog and him traveled about. His dog up and down. He up and died. After 20 years, he's still green. Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles.
That's okay. I equally am blind either way.
Do you write any tunes? Or do you have any tunes that you?
I mean, I write instrument. I mean, I have
some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to sing much though.
Uh-huh.
But I could play something.
You sing good though, man. That's
well,
nice.
Thank
I
you.
Love doing the, you know, harmonies and stuff like that. It's always so much fun.
let's see. Let me think.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you know, if you have something you want to play. That's right, you wrote that, didn't you?
That was not when I was playing with Buddy.
Yeah, have you seen anything else in there you like? Just, thank you.
Stripes. It's not unusual. Well. Da 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 da.
So you were playing a show recently. What was that all about? or tell me about some of your greatest gigs.
My escapades.
Your greatest gig and your worst gig.
My greatest gig.
I saw that on a website recently. So
greatest gig and worst gig?
Yeah.
It's hard to come up with a worst gig. Greatest gig.
I got some worst gigs.
I played a gig in Bowling Green, Kentucky once. And it was a wonderful little club. And every night everybody would go in the bathroom and drink moonshine. Really? And they would get so absolutely crazy, just as crazy as could be. And they, thank heavens, nobody had guns. Well, they probably did have guns, but they would always get into fights with knives. And I was just talking about this the other day to a class of mine. What do you do if somebody shoots a gun off?
These are good things to know.
That's exactly right.
What do you do? I don't know.
Exactly, you hit the floor.
You don't,
because a lot of people will just go, they'll just go, I don't believe this is going on. They'll stand up and just look around like there's nothing wrong. And what you're supposed to do, of course, is head for cover. Uh-huh. Don't try to run out the door. And whatever you do, don't try to take the gun away from the guy or gal.
Right.
And so you hit the floor. But anyway, this one night, these two guys, usually it was just mostly bravado, and they were... people would get in a knife fight and they would just cut each other and that would be it. They'd have a drink and that would be it. But these guys were actually just going at it. Mm. So they were just like really stabbing each other a lot and stuff. So the owner took out a gun and he didn't shoot any of them, but he started shooting it off in the air and it scared the heck out of me. And that was the last night I played that gig.
So that was your best gig or worst gig?
That was my best gig. It goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
No one was killed on that one. Well, I've played a couple. Well, there's worse gigs. I mean, I did play a job once where a guy had a heart attack and died. Uh-huh. I was playing in a bluegrass band, and the guy wanted to hear this song. Gonna lay around, roll in my sweet baby's arms. Roll in my sweet baby's arms. Roll around the shack till the band play comes back. Roll in my sweet baby's arms. And the guy wanted to hear that before we started, and he was just adamant about it. Will you please play this song? Please play this song. So, okay, play it the first song. Okay, we'll play the first song. Played that song, first song. The guy came out there and was dancing like a nut, had a freaking heart attack and died.
Right then and there.
Right there. And the worst part was we had to finish the night. Hmm. The club owner would not let us go home.
Oh, of course not.
I was a kid, as you could, I would just go home now, no matter what the club owner said, but I was just an obedient kid at that point. So I'm just, okay, for my $50 or whatever it was,
$50
So that was a bad one. But there's some good ones. I played I played a gig once by default. I used to be in a band in Boston, and I just thought this was an interesting gig. And it was the band I was in was called The Wreckage, and a lot of the people in that band have kind of gone on and become fairly famous. And it was a really good rock band, original kind of rock and roll band, and what happened is we were going to play this gig, and at the towards the end, it's kind of an interesting moment in rock history. A band called L.A. Guns, they had to back out of the tour, and because they went back to L.A. and joined up with Axl Rose and became Guns N' Roses, right? So we got their spot on this tour, and we got to open for Kiss, which was just like Spinal Tap, but it was huge audiences, and it was a really fun the first gig we did was really incredible.
Very cool.
So we opened for Kiss, and it was just like every rock and roll ridiculous thing you can imagine.
And what was the name of the band?
It was called The Wreckage. The band was The Wreckage. Good name for a rock band.
So there were a lot of people there, like thousands.
Oh, it was like 30 or 40. It was an outdoor concert. 30 or 40,000.
Nice.
And it was Kiss without their makeup.
Really?
And I don't mean to diss Kiss, but there's a reason they wear that makeup.
Well, yeah.
So we should play a Kiss song on that. But no.
Yeah.
I don't know any.
Really? Why not?
Empire.
Beth.
I want to rock and roll all night. Party every day or something.
Yeah, that sounds like a great gig.
Yeah, that was a good gig. How about you? What's a good one? What's one of your best gigs?
Oh, one of the best gigs? I don't know. One good gig was played New Year's Eve. Well, I played New Year's Eve for Diana Ross once.
Wow.
At the Diplomat Hotel down in Miami, Florida. And that was pretty cool. We all had our white tuxedos on, full orchestra, big band. And what was the other one? Another New Year's Eve. The New Year's Eve, I have a couple of good New Year's Eve gigs.
Always good for musicians.
Yeah. When Merv Griffin owned the Paradise Island Casino for a while down in the Bahamas.
Right.
And so he hired a big band to come down there, and it was a big celebrity golf tournament too. And so they flew us over there on his own little Merv Griffin Airlines from Florida, little Chalks planes, and we got to hang out at the casino for 3 or 4 days, and all expenses paid, and which of course we took full advantage of. And then and we played, you know, for Merv Griffin, and there were other celebrities
a lot of hits.
Yeah, that's right.
He wrote that.
He wrote several of those game show themes, which are some of them are pretty neat too,
and worth very lucrative as well.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the one song he did was "I'm a Big Band Singer." I don't think he wrote that, but you know that song?
I'm a big band singer in a big band.
Yeah, that's the one, right? But yes, that was probably right up there with the best gigs. I remember that Wayne Rogers was there at that gig, and because he was at the celebrity golf tournament thing.
Hawkeye?
The guy,
is that Hawkeye?
Well, he's the other one.
Hawkeye and Pierce.
Yeah, he's the other guy from MASH. So is it
Hawkeye
Pierce?
There's Pierce and Hawkeye.
So he was there, and I got to talk to him about this movie he was in. I don't know. It was called The Gig. Have you ever heard of that movie?
I don't know this movie.
It's a great movie. It's very sort of poignant too, because they it's about some sort of amateur musicians who play on the weekends, and then one day they get a real gig, and then all the trouble starts and everything. But in the movie, Wayne Rogers plays a trombone player, which I'm also a trombone player, and so you know you're always watching to see if they look like they can really play the instrument, right? Which half the time in the movies, they don't even try to even come close. But in this one, it kind of seemed like he did. And I got to ask him about that. And he said that, he really, really worked on it, you know. And
worked on he can actually play? Or
on looking right. Uh-huh. On, you know, getting close. Not that he's, no, I don't think he actually plays at all. But he worked on it, you know.
Busy.
They work on these things. Yeah, so
I got here's a gig. I played with Noel Redding once because I was a big Jimi Hendrix fan.
Cool.
And I played with him, and the drummer was Abe Laboriel Jr., who's playing with he's playing with Paul McCartney now, and Sting, and just everybody. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. I got to learn all these Jimi Hendrix songs.
Very cool.
Noel's passed away now, but he was. He was kind of difficult to get along with.
Was he?
I don't know if I should say that. He was an interesting fellow. He was hilarious, but he was kind of cranky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of those people in the music business. I think the business does it to you, too, because after a while, you know, it's so tough. It's just such a tough business.
It's a tough business.
Yeah.
I tell you.
No respect. But, you know.
Who have you studied with? Let me ask you that.
Oh, me?
Yeah. Who? What? What's your favorite? I mean, I kind of enjoy that more than the gigs. Is
just learning and playing.
Yeah, learning and playing.
Yes.
Sounds like a textbook for first graders.
There are pocket protectors out here.
Yeah.
And, but it is true. Learning is something that I've done quite a bit of, actually. I don't know how much of it actually, you know,
stuck,
absorbed,
though.
You know, but. We have a long list of that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of my favorite piano player teachers in Texas was Steve Harlos, and he's an excellent sort of classical player and jazz player, which of course is pretty rare.
Yep, third stream.
Yeah, third stream. I like third stream stuff. I actually did a big dissertation as part of my doctoral degree about third string music and Gunther Schuller.
Yeah, Gunther.
Yeah, you know Gunther?
I haven't met him, but we don't hang. But
yeah, it's I would be impressed if you were like hang with Gunther.
Oh,
yeah,
Gunther, like
he was very hard to track down. I spent.
NEC, he's over at New England Conservatory, right?
Well, he was the president of the New England Conservatory, right, for quite some time, which is amazing considering he never graduated from high school.
Really?
Isn't that something?
Wow! I saw him. There used to be a television show, and it was Bernstein, right?
Mm-hmm.
The conductor.
Right.
And,
yeah, Leonard Bernstein.
And it was a great TV show for kids, educating kids. Mm-hmm. And he played classical music, and then the first violinist, I think the concertmaster, was Gunther Schuller's father.
Ooh.
In this orchestra, in the
really?
Like probably in the New York, you know, Phil.
Right, New York Phil, yeah.
And so he said, and here's his kid, and he came out and played with, you know. Then he had like, you know.
I think actually his father was the in the New York Metropolitan Opera Orchestra.
Okay.
Could it have been that?
Yeah. And he had these cats, and they played some classical tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought out a jazz band, and Gunther was playing with them.
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing. And he said, and here's third stream. It was kind of like introducing third stream.
So he's playing his French horn.
Of the two. Was that what he was doing?
Well, he plays French horn, and he might have been conducting.
He was playing piano or something, maybe.
Or it could have been.
Maybe he wrote the tune or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just he brought him out, and he was just this kid. And I thought, he's just a young guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he never graduated from high school.
Well, yeah, and he did a lot of cool things. You know, he was on the Birth of the Cool.
Really?
Album. Yeah, on French horn.
Do that all the time.
Yeah.
Man.
So that was one of, you know, the really cool things about him. He was. Because in the neat thing about him is, which ties into the theme of our show, the American Music Hour, is because Gunther Schuller, you know, it's a very, of course, that name does not sound American.
No.
It doesn't scream America.
It's Italian or something, isn't it?
Right. I think it's, German. Yeah, it's a very German name. And I'm going next week.
Really cosmic.
Exactly. Who knows? Maybe I'll run into some of his people over there. But, so his family was very German, but they raised him in America. And he actually did study, I think, at a German boarding school for a while. But he totally considers himself American, you know. And the thing is, with the music, you know, with classical music, as we know it, is mostly European music.
Yeah.
And so, of course, Gunther Schuller was terribly interested in jazz, and you know, he wasn't a great jazz soloist or anything, but he became this great just student of jazz, and he hung out with all these people. Yeah. And he told me, you know, about, you know, Lawrence Brown, the trombone player with Ellington, and how he knew him, and he was very underrated, and he can tell you that Lawrence Brown was the first one to record a high F on the trombone. And he can tell you the exact, you know, solo, and which I've forgotten.
Is that that note, or is it?
Yeah, it's like
that's a high note, isn't it?
That's a high note for trombone. Now it's kind of pretty commonplace. You know, there's sort of this high note inflation that happens, you know, with the whole Maynard Ferguson.
Passe,
yeah, right. You know,
That's my lowest note now.
Exactly. You know, it's like, now it's like if you're nothing if you don't have a high F. But back then it was pretty impressive. So Gunther is one of these people is, you know, terribly interested in American music and combining it with classical music, and this whole idea of third stream is just super cool. Speaking of other favorite teachers, well, in the course of this same process, this dissertation, I did some studying with John Swallow, who was the trombone professor at Yale.
Wow.
For many years, and retired a few years ago. But he was big buddies with Schuller, and in fact had gotten him to write this trombone concerto for him, which he called Eine kleine Posaunenmusik.
A little what?
A little trombone music.
Ah.
Very good, very good. So,
German.
Yeah, very German. So he took advantage of that every now and then too. In fact, I think he wrote a couple of concertos called Eine kleine something or other. in the course of interviewing John Swallow at Yale was really interesting, because you know, I told him that, you know, how jazz, of course, gets a bad name in the schools, and sometimes is always put on the back burner and in the basement and wherever. But and he said, you know, one of his great regrets in life was not doing more with jazz. And he was telling me this, he's 75 years old, you know, he had nothing to hide, nothing to prove, you know. But he said also that, and I told him that to me, you know, jazz is such a cool art form, especially the way I think of it, sort of in the way, you know, of Chick Corea with extended chords, you know, and that it's really, you know, kind of, you know, dare I say, above classical music, you know. And and he just didn't hesitate for a second and said, he said, oh, absolutely. He said, I absolutely agree. It is higher, you know.
Wow.
It's more difficult, you know. He said his favorite players are guys who can kind of do both.
Do both,
you know?
Absolutely.
Like he mentioned some cornetto player in New York that he knew that said he could, you know, which is a Baroque instrument, I suppose, but that he could, you know, play great, you know, Gabrielli and whatnot, and he could swing it a little bit if you wanted him to, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's I've had some really interesting teachers along the way. How about you? How about some of your other ones?
Well, I had a Lenny Bro for a teacher, and he was a great player, and I would go see him every night. But I was too young at that time really to get a lot from him. But other teachers, I had a lot of great teachers when I went to school. I went to Berkeley, and there was a Bill Levitt. He was like a really good guy. And there was a guy named John Laporta, and he is one of my all-time favorite. He's one of those guys who could just say one sentence, and it would clarify something you had been working your entire life on. He could just say, no, it's just this, you know, and he was just so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of some of those quotes, but words pale. What's that? Words pale in comparison to the experience of music, or something. No matter how well you can describe something, you can never convey the feeling of music, probably art, with words.
Very true.
But he's one of my faves. I was just thinking though, combining music.
Mm-hmm.
I come from this very rural upbringing, and I played bluegrass and that kind of music when I was a kid. And one of my big idols was a guy named Chet Atkins, who's one of the most recorded guys in the world and most influential. And he had this style with it, kind of like that, which seems kind of
play something like that.
But his big influences were the guy who Merle Travis, who did this. That kind of stuff, and also Django Reinhardt. So, and also his brother was in Les Paul's band, so he was a major player. But he did this to sell records mostly.
Right. Sure.
But anyway, he did a series of albums, and I'm going to play a little bit.
Nice.
He did a series of albums where he picked on people. He picked Chet Atkins, picked on the Beatles, and then he would do you know that kind of stuff. That kind of versions of all these different Beatles songs and Jerry Reed and all these different people and the hits. So he did everybody, but he left out one of my favorite bands because I grew up in the 70s listening to the British Invasion people, and he left out Led Zeppelin. He never picked on Led Zeppelin, so I did a medley of songs where he
nice.
And he passed away before I could pass this idea past him.
So in the style
it's a
of
tribute,
Chet Atkins.
And it's Chet picks on Led,
yeah.
Or Chet gets the lead out.
There
so
you go.
See if you can recognize these timeless classics.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you.
So there was a little Ina Kleina Chet music.
Ina Kleina guitar music. Yeah, very cool. I heard rock and roll in there. And, yep. Yeah.
Same key, too.
Right, and Stairway to Heaven.
And a whole lot of love.
Yeah.
This is. I usually put this part in with a mic stand. Part of the shtick.
Very cool. Very cool. That was nice, man. You need Thank to you. Make a whole CD of that
a
stuff. Whole,
well, I have another one.
Do it. Hendrix.
Chet picks on Jimmy.
Well, we have to get you to do that here in a minute.
Yeah. No, I won't.
Have Chet picks on the average white man, and yes. Chet picks on Wild Cherry.
See?
Yeah. 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 That'd be fun. I could totally do that one.
All of those are in there.
Very cool. Yeah. So as of course we're all influenced by those rock bands, I think. Mm-hmm. Anybody around, you know, that came up in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and a little bit of the 60s.
Well, I guess I was a kid in the 60s. I guess the 70s were a bigger one. In the 60s, I grew up so far out in the boonies that things got to me. Like, my parents were into, like, Johnny Cash and, mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I grew up doing all that stuff. And when I was just a kid, my first job, my summer vacation after mm-hmm. I graduated, mm-hmm. I got this job with a woman named Marilyn Sellers, and she had a hit, a mm-hmm. Country Western hit, that became the Alcoholics Anonymous theme song. It's One Day at a Time.
Oh, yeah.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you.
Okay.
Anyway, that was a big, huge hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that gig, and then it was downhill from there. It was like, I was like, then I moved to Nashville.
Okay.
And I got a job in this place called Tootsie's,
mm-hmm.
and it was in a very good, it was a great job, actually, for a kid, mm-hmm. just a kid. Because we would play from 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 3 o'clock at night with an hour off for dinner, and you couldn't take a break unless somebody sat in for you.
So 12 hours.
12 hours straight. So I really got chops in a hurry. Sitting chops.
That's like, even, that's tops my,
it's a ma-
my
it's
long
a-
gig story. I always was, my first gig in Miami was 9:30 to 3:30.
That's a long gig.
And I thought that was like, really something until 3 to 3. That's amazing.
And you couldn't go to the bathroom.
You couldn't go to the bathroom for 12
unless
hours?
Somebody would sit in for you. You'd have to please.
This was at Nashville.
Play. Yeah, but the best people in the world. It was right across from the alley from the Ryman, and the people would come there to warm up. So you would meet all of the country hoi polloi.
You must have got some chops in a hurry.
I did. See, that's the thing. That's why it was so good. And people, everybody would sit in. So I was always learning a million
mean
songs, and it was the best thing for me. But it was a hard game.
How many sets?
One big, two long ones.
Just one.
You know?
Whoa.
You know, but it was a revolving thing, and people would sit. And it was for tips. That was the pay. But it was such a good gig. It was a pretty coveted gig.
Really? Well, tips were good.
Yeah, tips were better than, you know, the other. This was a horrible part, you know, in the red light district of.
Right.
It was between a pawn shop and a brothel.
Uh-huh. Then in Nashville?
So it was educational in several ways.
Yeah,
you know, not
I guess
that, you
so.
Know, not that way. But,
right.
But, I mean, it was just opened my eyes.
Yeah.
To the ways of the world.
Very interesting, So it was just, I mean, you didn't have any breaks? You just, you're on stage?
You were on stage the entire time. And the only way, but there was a lot of people, and people would sit in.
Okay, and that was the only way to get to.
Yeah, and then you could have a break, but you could have a long break. You could have an hour if somebody wanted to sit in for an hour. But, so there were a lot of times when you didn't. You were waiting for 6 o'clock, you know, so you could have supper.
Oh, you had a dinner break?
Yeah, an hour off.
An hour off at 6?
Yeah.
But then you're back on till 3 a.m.?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they had a guy who sat in on that dinner break and did a single.
Did a solo?
Yeah.
guitar.
Yep. Yeah. He sang Hank Williams songs, and he was a great songwriter.
How long did you do that gig?
A little bit less than a year, probably.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Then I modulated out of that. I liked that gig, though. It was great. the players were amazing. All these people would come in and see you, and they would be all these famous people, you know, always, and people who could do things. I got a million job offers, and I turned them down because I wanted to keep that gig.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's funny. It reminds me of, you know, again, my first Latin gig in Miami was 9:30 to 3:30. We played 7 sets.
It was a long time. Blow into a trumpet.
Exactly.
I mean, a trombone.
Trombone, yeah. It was a lot of notes.
Mm-hmm.
We played 30 on, 30 off. And then in the last hour, we played 20 on, 20 off, 20 back on. We called that the Cumbia-thon.
Cumbia.
Yes, this was the main thing we played because it was Colombian music. Yeah, people. So, but the same thing, I got a call one day from a guy to do a show, and they said, Mike, you know, can you do this show? And it's 10 days up in, I think, Fort Lauderdale, or Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah, that's where Bobby Economo lives.
Exactly. Hollywood. Bobby Economo. There we go. Where I did meet him there. Played a gig with him. But, and I said, well, thanks, but, you know, I've got a gig, you know, because I was thrilled. Here I was, 17 or 18 years old with a steady gig, 3 nights a week. And it was one of my teachers who called me, and he said, I think it was Dan Bonsanti, University of Miami, and he said, there's just kind of the silence on the phone. And he says, well, I think no matter whatever you've got, you should probably do this instead. And I said, okay, I see where this is going, you know. So I went ahead and accepted it, but it ended up being the Tom Jones.
Oh, wow.
So I played with Tom Jones for 10 days. So it was pretty neat. Yeah, exactly.
I love Tom Jones.
Well, and you're seeing some of the music. Yeah. Yep. And I at one time did a tribute to some of the people I've performed with over the years.
Oh, wow. So a medley of the people you've... Wow, that'd be a great thing to do.
You know? So, yeah. So I did Tom Jones and Burt Bacharach and even Diana Ross and Bobby Caldwell and a few of those people that I got to jam with over the years. But yeah, that reminds me of that story. But it's kind of funny how you said you modulated to a different gig after that, huh?
Yeah.
Up a half step,
music
hopefully.
Talk. No, it was down a minor third, I think.
Yeah. Well, we should play something else. Mm-hmm. What about, do you ever play any of any Chick Corea stuff, like Spain? Mm-hmm. Or?
I think you've got a chart in here.
Yeah.
It's like if I cop out during the hard part, I might be able to do it. Boom, but are they alphabetical? Oh. Oh. Oh, what's that? Okay.
We could try that. I wouldn't mind trying one of them. There's one or two of my tunes in there too. Maybe.
Okay.
Do one of those too, but this, of course, Chick is one of my favorite people.
So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
We don't have to do this if you don't want to. It has the strangest form. That's the hardest thing about Spain.
Oh, and then I get it. Oh, that's that part. You never see that. I never see it. Da 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 da.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Try the intro too. Thank you. Let's try this. I'll see if I can remember the words.
Oh, there's words.
There's words.
Double time Latin. So is it?
Yeah, it's kind of like this. Like. The house up on the hill was never meant for two. They afforded me the solitude. They made you be untrue. We tried our best to make something out of nothing. We mystified the rest with our brand of loving. Back to the books and the chores and the everyday bores of life. Making coffee never used to be such a drag. Well, all I know is for 3 short months we were flying with the rainbow. I'm back to my cynical self. Guess we got what we deserved. Was never meant to last. Lessons to be learned to reconcile the past. We tried our best to make something out of nothing. We mystified the rest with our brand of loving. Back to the books and the chores and the everyday bores of life. Making coffee never used to be such a drag. Well, all I know is for 3 short months we were flying with the rainbow. Now I'm back to my cynical self. We tried our best to make something out of nothing. We mystified the rest with our brand of loving. Back to the books and the chores and the everyday bores of life. Making coffee never used to be such a drag. Well, all I know is for 3 short months we were flying with the rainbow. Now I'm back to my cynical self. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That rang. That sharp little. Or what? Yeah, what was that?
Yeah.
An F?
Yeah. Yeah. The sharp 11.
One of my favorite 11s.
Yeah.
Things to do with 11. Got another. That was beautiful.
Thanks, man. Yeah, well, it sounded really nice with your guitar, too. Want to take a little break and then maybe play another one or something?
Okay.
Let's do that.
What time is it, by the way?
I don't know. We need to look and see. But yeah, I'm here with Bobby Stanton, ladies and gentlemen, the great guitarist, the legend.
The legend.
And we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
This is Dr. Mike Bogle. Thanks for checking out the American Music Hour with my special guest, Bobby Stanton.